As usual, glad to have you with us for another edition of Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. If you were listening to our show yesterday, you know that we said today we would be featuring a program with Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger talking about the challenges that he faces in trying to run a primary election on June 9th. That show also features former Secretary of State Kathy Cox, Chatham County Chairman Al Scott. But when Governor Kemp announced what many people expected was going to happen, that he was lifting the shelter-in-place order, we felt that was a hugely consequential decision. And because that conversation with the Secretary of State and others is already recorded, we're going to push that show to Monday. You will hear it on Monday morning and afternoon. So instead today, we've, at the last minute, asked our panel to come together, and they very graciously agreed to do that, to talk about the consequences of the governor's decision. And before I introduce the panel, before we begin the conversation with Cody Hall, the governor's press secretary, who agreed to join us, let me just recap what's happened. Governor Kemp told Greg Bluestein of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that the time has come to focus on economic recovery. He said that with increased testing and ample hospital beds, Georgia is ready to handle a surge in coronavirus cases should it occur. The quote is, "What we've done has worked. It's given us time to build our hospital infrastructure capacity, get ventilators, and ramp up testing." That's what really drove our decision. We'll get into that in more depth. But now I want to share with you some research that 538 has been doing. 538 put together a panel of statisticians, medical statisticians from across the country who have been analyzing data in their own models. And here's what they said in a report that they just issued about Georgia. On April 20th, Georgia stood at about 700 new cases per day, April 20th. It was on April 23rd, of course, that the governor partially opened the state for business. That's when we did, you know, the bowling alleys, the tattoo parlors, the massage therapists, and the like. And so then they calculated from April 23rd moving forward. And here's what they've come up with. They suggest that by May 16th, we're likely to have an average of 1,044 new confirmed cases per day. And that is before the governor issued his lifting of the shelter-in-place order. And some of those experts think that it could be as high as 2,200 or 2,300 cases per day based on the partial lifting of the order. They also said that they could have seen a reduction had Georgia not relaxed the order the first time around to indicate there'd be only something like 487 new cases per day by the week of May 16th. Okay, so those are projections. Those are models. They are certainly subject to change and may not, in fact, take place. But I think it's an important place for us to start the conversation. All that said, we are joined today, as we are every Monday and Friday, by Jim Galloway. He's the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He has a brand new column that's online, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. We're also joined today by Greg Bluestein, his colleague at the AJC, who's been doing a lot of the investigating of COVID-19 from a political point of view, reporting on what the governor and others are doing. We have Patricia Murphy back with us for the first time in a while, and we're so glad she is here. Patricia is a syndicated columnist. She has a brand new piece in USA Today. We'll talk about that in a little while. And she's been reporting for GPB on lawmakers, which may get started anytime at some point soon. I forgot to ask each of you to say a couple. Jim, how are you holding up?
Oh, we're doing great over here, up here in Kennesaw. It's a beautiful morning. Yep. I'm looking out there. It's just very, very quiet. Probably too quiet.
You continuing to make those early morning senior citizen runs to Costco every now and then?
Try to keep them down to at least to one a week or so, you know? Trying to lower the profile.
Yeah. Hey, Patricia, you've been at home with your two children for, what, 7, 8 weeks now? Are you still doing okay?
It's actually been 32 years that I've been home. I'm doing homeschooling. Yes, we're doing great. I'm so grateful for this beautiful weather. And our neighborhood has just turned into it. Everybody's saying it kind of reminds them of that 70s show. It's just kids riding around on their bikes and nobody has any after school activities. You know, it's very old fashioned and really a wonderful silver lining to the whole situation. It's really lovely. Yes.
Oh, that's terrific. And Greg, your schedule, I mean, I know you're at home with your two daughters, but I know you're also getting out and reporting, and whether you're doing it from your office at home or out on the road somewhere, you haven't slowed down for a second.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like we're working harder than ever, and I'm also around my kids more than ever, for better or for worse, but I'm just like Patricia, we've gotten to know we were tight with our neighbors, but we've got to know them even better. And the kids have both mastered bike riding. You know, a month ago, they barely know how to ride a bike. And now, yesterday, we biked to dinner and ice cream 3 or 4 miles away. So they're all in now.
Well, all right, let's do this. Let's bring in Cody Hall. And Greg, because you interviewed the governor yesterday, as we bring Cody in, but by the way, Cody, welcome to Political Rewind. You're down at your office at the state capitol, right?
Yes, sir.
And that's it. That's about, I think those are the kind of answers we're going to get from Cody. Greg Bluestein, you did talk to the governor yesterday, and I think I accurately reported back what he told you. It sounds, Greg, like the governor was essentially saying, and you're certainly welcome to start questioning of Cody about this. It sounds like the governor is essentially saying, wow, thank goodness we got through this. Yeah, there are some problems here or there. Senior citizen homes, assisted living facilities, people who are medically fragile or older. Yeah, they may have things to worry about. But thank goodness, after 3.5, almost 4 weeks of sheltering in place, we can start doing business again. Is that a fair assessment of how he talked about this?
I mean, look, he had been talking for a while, hinting that this decision was coming, talking about the economic toll that this pandemic has taken on Georgians. More than 1 in 5 Georgians are on state unemployment benefit claims right now. But one of the things he did make sure he pointed out was that something like 43-44% of the deaths are linked to nursing homes in Georgia. And it's one of the reasons why when he lifted these general orders, he still extended them for nursing homes, for those elderly and the medically fragile. It's a different sort of approach, right? It's rather than keeping everyone locked down, keeping everyone at home, it's keeping the people who are most at risk, either in their nursing homes or long-term care facilities or at home. At the same time, they're you know, trying to navigate this balance with still urging people, if they can, to stay home, to stay out of public places, and if they go to public places, wear masks. But, you know, we can already tell this morning, we're already getting reports that traffic is going up. You know, malls and businesses are going to start to reopen over the next few days and weeks. So we're going to start to see a sort of a halting return to normal life.
Cody, I find that a little confusing, and I'm glad you're here to help clarify this. Shelter in place is lifted, but Georgians who can should continue to shelter in place. That sounds like a mixed message to me. Please help me understand what I'm missing.
Sure. So I'll start by saying, I think what I started by saying the last time I was on the show, Bill, that these actions are new for everyone. They're new for the public to be able to consume. They're new for government officials to have to make. So essentially what we did was lift the mandatory shelter in place for all Georgians, except for, you know, essential travel and critical infrastructure workers, starting today or at midnight last night. But we extended the shelter in place, the mandatory shelter in place for elderly Georgians and those with chronic underlying health conditions. As we know, the data tells us that those folks are most vulnerable to severe repercussions from the virus until June 12th. Now, what the governor has said is, look, if you can continue to shelter in place, if your work allows you to continue to telework, please continue to do that. Stay at home whenever possible. But we did take that mandate off of most Georgians in order to shelter in place.
Jim, Patricia, one of you want to jump in?
Yeah, if I could, Bill, Cody, we still, at least so far as what we know of the numbers that are coming in on the public health website page, there's still a great racial disparity in the victims of COVID-19. African Americans are far disproportionately likely to be victims, and we've, you know, I'm sure you've heard over the last week, you know, Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms and other Georgia mayors cite a lack of communication coordination between the state capitol and themselves. Is there any attempt being made to correct that?
Look, the governor and the mayor and our staffs work closely together on a wide variety of issues, including the coronavirus, and we'll continue to do that. I think we've announced a number of new testing sites in the South Fulton area over the last couple of weeks. The Guard is working with Fulton County to expand testing operations in the county. Local boards of public health in Fulton, DeKalb, Rockdale, Clayton are working closely together with our team at State DPH and the Georgia Guard to expand testing operations there. But look, you know, we have over 100 members of our coronavirus task force. The data changes by the hour, and as we move forward, we're trying to make the best decisions possible based on the data that we have, but also respond in a timely manner to this virus.
But has the governor and Mayor Bottoms talked in the last week?
They spoke, I know, 2 days ago. I think they may have spoke yesterday. If not them, our chief of staff did speak.
I want to get Patricia in, but before I do, as long as we're talking about Mayor Bottoms, she was all over MSNBC last night and talked about her feelings about the lifting of the restrictions. Let's listen to just one of the things she said.
This could be catastrophic. We have about 50% of the deaths in our state attributable to African Americans, yet we only make up 30% of the population. And I am extremely concerned that we are continuing to dig in as we head in the wrong direction.
Patricia?
Cody, it's Patricia. When the governor announced that there would be this shelter in place order at the beginning of April, he said that the information from the CDC that asymptomatic carriers could spread this was a game-changing piece of information for him. And I've never heard him go back to that in these conversations about reopening the state. Has anything changed with that information, or has his understanding of it changed, or is he not as worried about that? I hear people tell me, well, go out if you feel safe, but don't go out if you don't feel safe. But that doesn't really account for that asymptomatic carrier who could be spreading it without knowing it. And I think that's a safety element that we haven't heard addressed a lot.
Sure. So a couple of quick things. Multiple press releases from our offices and multiple interviews during the month of March, the governor talked about the risk of asymptomatic transmission, especially in nursing homes. That's why we issued guidance with the Georgia Healthcare Association to those facilities to ensure that they knew the risk of asymptomatic transmission so that they were taking all steps possible to make sure that those vulnerable residents were kept safe. Obviously, what the governor was referring to in that press conference, and he said since, was the fact that the CDC updated their guidelines that showed a greater transmission rate among asymptomatic individuals, and that is what Dr. Toomey, a 40-year epidemiologist, called a game changer in terms of how she was recommending to the governor to respond to this virus. So obviously going forward, that's one of the reasons why the governor has continued to urge folks, if you're able to, please stay home. When you're out in public at the grocery store, wear a mask, maintain social distancing, because we do recognize that asymptomatic transmission is a real threat, especially to those vulnerable Georgians who we have continued to mandate to continue to shelter in place, and especially for those in our long-term care facilities. Greg mentioned that 43% of the deaths in the state are attributable to those long-term care facilities. So that's one of our main focuses going forward, is how we protect those vulnerable populations.
You know, everybody, it strikes me, and Cody can respond to this, but everybody else is more than welcome to weigh in. Cody has said at the very beginning of the show, and he's certainly right, there's still so much we don't know about this virus, and we're behaving perhaps increasingly as if we all, whether those of us who are, you know, think we should be more cautious and others who think we need to relax restrictions, we're all shooting in the dark to some extent. So here's the reason I mentioned that. Cody's on a couple of occasions said, the older and more medically fragile Georgians need to be particularly careful because of the disease's impact on them, except that CDC issued what I thought was a really startling report the other day, in which they said their data shows that it's healthy young Georgians with no pre-existing health conditions who are increasingly falling ill to COVID-19 with severe complications, even more so than the elderly and the immunocompromised. So if you're starting to see that 60% of the cases were under the age of 65, all it says to me, panel, is that we know very little about how this virus behaves, and we're in trouble if we think we know.
And Cody, and maybe this is a way of getting at what where Bill's driving. How over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, how will the governor and you, along with you and his aides, how will you evaluate whether this has been a success, and at what point might you have to shift directions? I mean, have you kind of charted out any kind of ceiling that you're unwilling to see happen in terms of infections or fatalities?
Sure. So I'll kind of go through what the data that we looked at to arrive at this position, and then I'll go through really if that same data that we're going to look at going forward. Number one is the gating criteria that the White House put out in order to enter phase one. Things like how many emergency room visits are you seeing from folks who have influenza-like illnesses? What's the percent positive of the tests you're taking out of the total number of tests that are reported to the state? Are you able to treat patients without crisis care? Do you have a robust testing program for frontline workers? We've met all that gating criteria, which allowed us to move into phase one. But the governor has said that among that, he's also looking at what does our hospitalization rate look like. The governor just got off a phone call with Metro Atlanta Hospital CEOs this morning. It was about a 45-minute phone call, checking in with them, seeing what their rate of COVID-19 positive patients and patients under investigation looked like, how their PPE supplies were looking. All those were positive signs from those CEOs, and we had multiple conversations before taking this step with those CEOs to ensure that they felt comfortable moving back into elective surgeries, those kind of things. So it's the hospitalization on one part. We had the lowest number of ventilators in use since late March. That was yesterday. We continue to see our ICU capacity go up. So those are among those different things. But then also you'll see folks continually refer to a 14-day rolling average in the number of cases, the number of deaths. Both of those categories are moving in our direction. And if they continue to do that, then looking at the data, listening to Dr. Toomey, we'll continue to see if further steps are needed or if we're moving towards a phase two.
Greg, you want to jump in? We haven't heard from you for a while.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this sort of illustrates the exact problem that the governor's office in Georgia is really facing, and residents who are trying to make sense of all these directives that are coming. And look, when the governor made his announcement yesterday, he did lay out the option of coming back later on and enforcing new restrictions if there is a second outbreak, as many public health experts fear. If that happens, you're going to have to sort of re-educate a lot of Georgians. He's pretty confident that Georgians understand the risks, understand the guidelines for social distancing and all those others. But again, we're already kind of seeing that thaw, and these next few weeks are going to be really key to see. We're not going to know how the governor's order is working, how effective it is, really for a month or so, if we see a rebound or if we see a continuing decline or a decline in general in cases.
You know, Patricia, it seems to me Greg makes a really good point. A lot of this does rely on the governor suggesting we understand the rules for social distancing. We're already nervous enough that we are not going to suddenly start having street parties in our neighborhood. We're not going to suddenly rush the grocery store and crowd together in supermarkets, although I've seen some of that already, even while the restrictions were in place. So, Patricia, I mean, in some ways, the governor really is counting on each of us to maintain our own rules for how we avoid spreading the virus. What's your response to that?
Well, I think that's true. I mean, I think, you know, in a state of 8 million people, he can't call every person and say, here's what you need to be doing. And there is a level of personal responsibility people have to follow in terms of keeping themselves and their families safe. And the governor has to rely on people to do that. My concern is that as I've been out in the state and when businesses are starting to reopen, there does appear to be a level of a wide swath of interpretation about what is safe and what's okay. And for a public health crisis, in a pandemic, it really is going to come down to enforcement. And I'll give you an example. On Friday, when nail salons opened up, I went just as a test to go to see what a number of salons in Atlanta were doing. Most of them had stayed closed. The ones that were open were social distancing, doing by appointment only, as the governor requested. But outside of Metro Atlanta, there was a nail salon. There were probably 30 people in there. Shoulder to shoulder, women waiting in line, women under the dryers, reading the same magazine. They were so close to each other. And so, Cody, in terms of enforcement, what is the enforcement piece of this for businesses? And if workers don't feel safe but know they need their jobs, what should workers do? Is there a way for them to reach out and request help or report something?
Sure. So a couple of things. Number one, our executive order deputized local and state law enforcement, all local and state law enforcement, to be able to enforce the executive order. So that means your local police, your sheriffs, GSP, troopers, all the above would be able to enforce this kind of with a three strikes and you could get your business closed. So I'd encourage anyone that is seeing folks that are not abiding by the executive order to contact their local law enforcement or their state law enforcement to ensure that people are abiding by the guidelines. And in terms of workers that are displaced, you know, I think Commissioner Mark Butler at the Georgia Department of Labor, they've been doing an incredible job. You know, they want to make sure that if you're a worker and you don't feel safe going back, that you are able to document all of that to the Department of Labor in order to still receive unemployment benefits. They've outlined that on their website as well.
Cody, do you have any record of any business being formally admonished or even shut down yet?
So the governor actually gave an example to Greg in his interview yesterday that there was a restaurant out in LaGrange that was not following the guidelines. Law enforcement got in touch with the owner. The owner said that manager was fired and that it would no longer occur at his restaurant. So that's just one anecdotal thing. But I do want to real quick yesterday we had a record number of tests, over 20,000 reported to the state website. That's almost a double or close to doubling the previous record we had set on Tuesday. So these are good signs as we move forward. But then again, the same point I made last time I was on the show, Bill, about state revenues and how we move forward from here, that states across the country are going to have to start making incredibly tough choices, worse than 2008, 2009 in terms of how do we go forward with the state budget process and how that looks coming out. And that's every state across the country. That's not just Georgia.
And we have a little bit of news on that this morning as we were speaking. James Salzer, our colleague, said that state agencies were told Friday today they should plan on cutting nearly $3.6 billion from their budgets this year, which is a huge chunk of the state's $28 billion or so dollar budget.
Yeah, to add to that, Greg, Darshan Kendrick, Representative Darshan Kendrick, sent out a tweet about this, and Tom Faust contacted her directly and asked if he could definitely, quote, if she could confirm what she's saying. She says, Cody, that that agency heads got letters saying to expect budget cut to cut their budgets 14% for FY 2021. Can you confirm that that letter went out and that's what agencies are being asked to do?
I'd want to make sure that that was from OPB and not from one of the appropriations committees at the state legislature. But I think, look, it is not going to be a fun process. I think that was one of the main keys missing from all of this. The governor and state government were attacked for the steps we were taking. But look, what happens when you have to cut a budget into the double digits? You know, I'm old enough to remember back earlier this year when we were lambasted for taking measured steps to cut 4% and 6% out of the amended budget and the full budget. So when you take that and multiply it a couple times, what's that going to look like? And I think that some of the Democratic state lawmakers who have taken such liberties to attack our approach, they're going to now have to be in a position of looking at our budget, actually looking at the numbers, not at rhetoric, and how do we move forward and still maintain essential services to the state. So I look forward to their feedback in that process because I think it's going to be much different for them than how they've had to or been able to proceed over the last couple of months.
Cody, we're going to let you go in a second, but I dropped something earlier, and I want to just circle back to it because it was a question that Jim Galloway asked about your boss, the governor, and those of you who are in the executive branch, in the administrative branch over there, are dealing with talking to local authorities. Jim asked you if the governor had talked to Mayor Bottoms recently. You said you thought that he had in the last day or two. She last night on MSNBC was once again pretty tough in talking about what this means, his lifting these restrictions. If he's talking to her and she's making these strong points, there's no way you can quantify this, but where are those conversations leading? What's the point of them?
Well, look, I think in almost every interview that I've watched with Mayor Bottoms, she has reiterated that the governor and her have a very good working relationship, and they do. And they'll continue to do that, not only on COVID-19, but other issues going forward. Look, I think anyone that has ever talked to the governor, especially Mayor Bottoms, would attest to the fact that he hears them. He listens to their advice, just like he's listening to the advice of Dr. Toomey and others throughout this process. And, you know, one of the aspects of this virus is that everyone, the buck stops with the guy that they elected governor. And I think that the governor is making these choices based on the data and the best advice that he has available to him at the time. But look, these are not easy choices. These are not easy times. And I think the governor readily accepts the fact that sometimes he's not going to be popular. But that's why a record number of people elected him to be the state's chief executive.
All right, Cody Hall, we appreciate your spending some time with us today. We're going to let you get back to work in your office. But we appreciate your being here, and we'll talk to you again as soon as we can. So take care, Cody. While Cody leaves us, why don't we take a break, and we'll come back with a lot more on Political Rewind. Greg Bluestein, let's follow up on the breaking news that we were able to say a little bit about with Cody Hall on the show, and that is the state agencies being told they're going to have to make significant budget cuts. Greg, James Salzer, your colleague, is reporting that story, and I think I'm correct, and you can make this clearer, that no agencies are excluded from this one. This is going to include education. It's going to include all of the previously exempt agencies which did not take budget cuts, right?
Yep, law enforcement. As you mentioned, the K-12 system, the higher education system, 14%, no exceptions. This letter came from Governor Kemp's budget office as well as legislative leaders. And it's certainly a move that could bring furloughs and layoffs to state employees, to teachers, elsewhere. Hiring freezes, all that. It's something that's just been expected for a long time. We just didn't know exactly the scope of the cuts as state collections are looking to be down at least $2 billion by the end of the current fiscal year. And, of course, that could get worse.
Yeah, one thing I'm interested in waiting and watching for is you know, Mr. Hall mentioned the 4-6% cuts that Kemp had asked for late last year. A lot of those cuts were to public health departments, which I would posit that's one area of the state budget that probably won't get hit as hard.
That's going to be interesting to watch play out in the weeks ahead. We do think, am I right, Patricia, we think the legislature is looking at coming back. I know that we now have been told that David Ralston is telling his committee chairs that they can begin committee meetings again as soon as, I think, the second week or so of May, and then perhaps the legislature will come back into session like right after the primary, somewhere around June 11th. Is that what they're looking at right now?
That's what they're looking at. It looks like there are going to be sort of several phases to this. The first phase would be online virtual committee hearings. We assume many of those would probably be budget hearings. Then they would, some of them would come back to Atlanta for in-person committee hearings. Again, those are numbers that you can keep relatively small. You can continue to social distance. And then the speaker had said he would like to come back in June. He doesn't want to come back before June because there are a number of budget numbers still outstanding in May, mm-hmm. and he said he'd like to get those numbers in before having the entire legislature come back. And, of course, all of this would be subject to the health and safety of people. I think Ralston has been quite vocal and really leaning forward on that piece of it. So it'll just sort of depend how everything breaks, although they, of course, have that budget deadline July 1st. The budget has to get passed come hell or high water before that date.
So, I mean, we've said this on the show on numerous occasions now, that no one doubts that governors across the country have tough decisions to make, Governor Kemp included. I mean, the economies are collapsing everywhere. But Carlos Del Rio today, in a tweet responding to the shelter-in-place order, Jim Galloway, said, yeah, reopen. You want to get the economy reopened, Governor Kemp, but you got to have healthy workers to be part of it. It is really, when you think about what Salzer is now reporting about the extent of the budget cuts, and you realize the damage that our economy is taking, you do understand the dilemma, but a resurgence of COVID-19 isn't going to make it better if the state starts opening up and the virus spreads.
No, and as Greg said earlier, we're going to find out whether this works or not probably within 3 to 4 weeks. One presumes that Ralston is going to get his way, and the legislature will hold off until June 11th after the June 9 primary. But you know, this balance is probably not going to be struck at first in government. It's going to be struck at first at the retail level, I think. And Patricia was alluded to this a little bit earlier, but you've got restaurants, for instance, in Atlanta right now, wondering, okay, if they have to observe the guidelines, and if they have to space their tables apart, if they have to, which means they're going to be only being able to serve half as many customers as they usually can at maximum, and may not even fill up those tables. Then, you know, do they even open? I will tell you, there's another balance coming up right now. Of course, is all right. We've heard that the governor has ordered $3.6 billion in planned budget cuts because of the pandemic response. Okay, so what does that do to the film TV tax credit that's been so productive here and produced so many jobs at a time when theaters themselves are under tremendous pressure, and they might a lot of these theater chains may not be able to handle going to half the custom that they're used to.
Galloway, I sense a column coming on from you on that one. That's really an interesting perspective. Greg Bluestein, we talk about the economic damage the virus is doing to the state of Georgia. You filed a story which talks about the political damage it's doing to Republicans who are in charge of, you know, the governor's office, the House, and the Senate. an internal poll of Republicans that Republicans are looking at really paints a bleak picture of how voters feel about them right now. Can you give us a little information from the poll that you've looked at?
Yeah, we usually look at, when we look at these internal polls, we take them with a grain of salt, especially if they're coming from, you know, rival camps. And this one in some form does, because it's from the House Republican Caucus and it involves Governor Kemp, who's not exactly besties Speaker Ralston is not exactly best friends with Governor Kemp right now. But it's the definition of an internal poll. This is done by the House Republican Caucus, and it shed some bad news for Republicans in general. It shows, first of all, that Trump is in a head-to-head tight race, basically a statistical tie with Joe Biden, which is not good news for Republicans right now after as they're trying to keep the state in Republican hands in every election since 1992. But also it shows that in general, the mood is pessimistic about a chance to return to normalcy amid the pandemic, and it shows that that voters don't give either Trump or Governor Kemp or even the legislature high marks for how they're responding to the pandemic. So it points to some troubles ahead. And also, one more thing to add, it shows that Kelly Loeffler, the newly appointed U.S. senator, is in basically tied in low double digits. She's around 11% with Reverend Raphael Warnock and Matt Lieberman, and it shows that that Doug Collins is leading the field by about 20 points.
Patricia, jump in. I think the Loeffler numbers are really interesting.
Gosh.
Go ahead.
Kelly Loeffler is at 12% right now. I just don't even know what to do with that information for a sitting U.S. senator. It certainly points to the fact Doug Collins, it's so interesting to me. He seems to have both the benefits of being an insider in terms of he has the name ID, he has the experience, he has the exposure, the benefits of being an insider, but also an outsider. So he is not being tied to President Trump in the way that Loeffler is, because she's been so outspoken in her support of the president. And Kemp has been so outspoken in his support of the president. And when they've tied themselves so closely to the job that Donald Trump is doing, when the president's numbers go down, they're going to go down right along with them. It's certainly – Loeffler has a very, very high, steep hill ahead of her. But those other numbers, when I worked in the Senate, we always believed, and the mantra is, the best politics – good politics is doing a good job. And I think that people's confidence needs to be restored in our leaders in terms of the way they're communicating about this virus, in terms of how they're restoring people's confidence, not just in the economy, but in the society. Is it safe to go out? Are they doing everything they can to balance both people's health and the economy? If there's any criticism I would offer of the governor, he's been very empathetic toward the very difficult situation with business owners. In terms of his communications, you don't hear that as much on the public health piece of it. I think he's been good on that side, but you feel his heart is with the business owners right now. He's very worried about them and worried about the state economy. People's concerns are with their families and their families' health, and they need to know their leaders feel that as well.
Yeah, look, Bill, it's first of all, I want to point to how unusual this situation is, and give Bluestein some credit here, because you don't get this kind of real time feedback very often when you're dealing with a crisis, and clearly that's what we have. This poll was finished on Monday, the day that movie theaters and restaurants were allowed to open. Of course, Kemp issued his lifting on Thursday. And the most important, the absolute most important figure in that poll is, and because it's the broadest, it's the right track, wrong track. You know, how many think, how many voters think we're on the right track? How many think we're on the wrong track? In November, the same poll showed an 18% more voters thought we were on the right track. It was they were good numbers for Republicans. That number has cratered down to 5%. It's a really steep decline in optimism.
Just to dig a little deeper into the polling for the House caucus, while voters are evenly split, according to the poll, on Trump's performance, Kemp is underwater. 52% disapprove. His approval rating is only 43%. Kelly Loeffler's approval rating is 20% with a disapproval of 47%. Collins isn't doing great, Doug Collins, but it's nevertheless higher than his disapproval, which is pretty good in these circumstances. So go ahead.
Yeah, no, if you are a statewide Republican office holder and you're running behind Donald Trump in Georgia, that's trouble. That's trouble for you.
Yeah.
Because generally the trend has been, even in 2018, statewide victories for Republicans showed you running maybe 3% higher than Donald Trump did in 2016.
And also another finding is interesting. I was about to say this. It also echoes a UGA poll that we saw earlier this week, where it says that a majority of voters, in this case 60% about, said Georgia's moving too quickly to ease these restrictions. So it shows an undercurrent of discontent about the governor's approach right now, at least to easing these pandemic restrictions.
I'll tell you what, let's get our final break of the show out of the way and come back. We will talk more about how the coronavirus is affecting the campaigns from 2020. But before we do that, we should point out that the polls we've just talked about, the pollsters were in the field getting answers to these questions before Governor Kemp yesterday afternoon lifted the shelter-in-place restrictions. So it'd be really something to see what those numbers are going to look like the next time people go out in the field. The trend is going to get a little bit worse for Republicans, but we'll just wait for pollsters to tell us about all that. Let's do this. We'll take our break and come back with more on Political Rewind. We're here on Political Rewind with Greg Bluestein, Jim Galloway, Patricia Murphy, talking about politics and the virus at this point. A quick program note, those of you who heard us say that today we were going to do our show with Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State, given the governor's decision yesterday afternoon to lift the shelter-in-place restrictions, we thought that was a consequential enough factor in terms of what the state's going to look like in the days ahead that we should move that show. It's already been recorded, and we will now air it on Monday's Political Rewind. So join us for that show. We are seeing the handling of the virus play into partisan politics in a pretty big way now. Jim Galloway, I think you were the one who pointed out that it's really become an issue in the Democratic race against David Perdue, that Amico, Teresa Tomlinson, and John Ossoff are all starting to use it against the way the Republicans, like David Perdue, have been handling the job. I would assume it's going to play a big role all the way through the primary, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we're headed toward a nationalist election in Georgia. And what Democrats are doing right now is they're trying to draw the dotted line from Donald Trump in the White House to Governor Kemp in the state capitol, back to David Perdue or in the case of Senate race number two, Kelly Loeffler. So yeah, this is becoming a package deal here.
Patricia, let me add a layer to this, which I think is kind of interesting. Jim talks about it becoming a national election. The New York Times had a really interesting piece today. They got a hold of a leaked memo from the NRSC, which advised Republican candidates in the election this year on how to deal with coronavirus issues. And one of the recommendations in it was, don't be too outspoken in your defense of President Trump. This coming from the Republican Senate Campaign Committee. When the White House heard about this, they were furious, and NRSC had to back away in a minute. But that emphasizes Galloway's point that everybody's going to be kind of stuck running on how Trump handles all this, and for that matter, how Kemp does here in Georgia.
I think that's right. And certainly the NRSC would not have sent that memo out had the president's numbers been going up. But his numbers have been steadily declining as he's insisted on, I don't want to say insisted, as he has been more and more outspoken and having his two-hour press conferences at the end of every day. That onslaught of information blots out the sun for anything else that's happening. It makes it so difficult for candidates. When the president is making all of the news, much of the news is negative, and it's totally unforced errors on the president's part. So his numbers have been going down, and any good campaign would say, do not tie yourself to a sinking ship. Not the president is sinking, but he certainly is going down, and these leaders can't afford to have their numbers go down with him. And it, when you look into that poll that we were talking about earlier, Georgians' top priority is controlling the spread of the coronavirus and returning mm-hmm. life to normal. That's the only issue in people's lives right now. The second issue is getting the economy back on track. This is going to be sort of a double-barreled situation for voters, and it's going to be, I think, the only way they evaluate people on the ballot this year. And that's why it's so important for leaders to get this right.
Greg, you spend a lot of time talking to legislative leaders, and sometimes they don't want to talk on the record about their feelings. But how nervous are they down there? What's the sense among Republicans who control the House and Senate about what's happening and how it might impact their futures?
Well, they're very nervous. I think that's safe to say. I mean, this is unprecedented territory. There's no good way to, you know, figure. You can't really look back to 1918 or 1917 in an effective way to figure out how to deal with this. Although we are echoing some of those strategies, but really what you're seeing too is the blame game. And I think one of the other parts of the NRSC guidance to candidates was to do just that, which was to shift focus to China. And we're seeing that play out in these congressional races in a major way already. Renee Unnerman, the 7th district. Candidates in the 9th and 14th district are running radio ads and other things saying this is all in Canada. China. Blame Canada. Blame China.
Okay. Now you take that, Bill, and you layer on upon that the fact that we passed the 1 million voter mark in absentee ballot requests on Thursday. And we're probably going to go. It's probably going to go up higher. We already have more ballot requests than we had votes in 2016. And the thing is, when you have new voting habits, and we've never seen this before, then the electorate becomes highly unpredictable, because we don't know who these people are. A lot of them have never participated in a primary before. And of course, we've got the situation in Fulton County where you had the coronavirus strike down two election officials. That's put them behind. I think I haven't checked the stats this morning. Yesterday, they had processed 26,000 absentee ballots, which would mean that they probably have 120,000 more to go.
Yeah. Jim, as long as you've got the ball, your column, by the way, we'll post a link. We're going to post a few links. We'll post a link to your column today on our social media. Patricia, we're going to post a link to the USA Today piece that you wrote, which is funny if it weren't so darn serious. And we'll have that up there as well. But Jim, your column takes the coronavirus as in a political way and zeroes it down into a very important Senate race involving Brandon Beach. We're running out of time, but just give us a little bit of why the virus is playing such a big role in that race.
Okay, this is the only other race where it's really playing in addition to the Loeffler Senate race. All right, Beach, if you'll recall, he's the one who he's the senator who first tested positive for the coronavirus immediately after the special session, which gave Kemp emergency powers in March. Beach attended that session, even though he had already been tested for COVID-19, just hadn't seen the results yet. And he's come under extreme criticism criticism for that. He was on a podcast this week in which he accepted the blame, he accepted the responsibility, but he wanted to make sure everybody knew that he didn't think that he was the one who brought that virus into the Capitol, and he's pointing the finger at Bruce Thompson. And it works into the politics. Bruce Thompson is backing Michael Caldwell, his state House member who's running against Beach in the June 9 primary up in North Fulton, Cherokee County.
So we're going to see the virus as a huge factor in races moving forward. Greg Bluestein, where are you? I think it was you who talked about the fact that we're already seeing increased traffic out there on the streets today. What are you going to be looking at? I mean, you're all over the place. Are you and your colleagues going to be out there kind of monitoring how people are getting back to apparently life at normal? By the way, before I give you an answer, we should say Macy's has now announced, they announced a little while ago, they're not going to open some of these Metro Atlanta stores that they said they were. They're not going to do it today. They may open them on Monday, but that's a little bit of a retreat. But what's your next step on this, Greg?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have reporters standing out all over Metro Atlanta, and you're seeing less, you know, you're still seeing activity on Metro Atlanta, but there's a little more peer pressure. There's a little more social media pressure on some of these businesses not to reopen. What I'm really interested in, and I've gone out a few times to rural areas, where there is more of an aggressive approach to reopening. I went to a state lawmaker's opening his restaurant Monday night. I've been down in Monroe County. So that's my plan, is to try to be a little bit further outside of the metro area to talk to folks who are taking that stance.
All right. That's it. Greg Bluestein gets the last word on today's show. Our GPB reporters will be out, of course, watching how activity picks up in the streets across the state as well. Patricia Murphy, thank you so much. You can go back to homeschooling your children now. Same with you, Greg Bluestein. Jim Galloway, I don't know if we're lucky or unlucky
at this point.
That we both have grown kids and don't have to deal with it. But thank you all for being here today. Tom Faust, you too. Take care of your children this weekend. I'm Bill Nigut. We'll see you back here on Monday for another Political Rewind.